You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Good evening. This is Quantum Leap Book Club, and our regular host, Parisha, will not be joining us tonight as she is traveling and teaching. So her co-hosts will cover tonight's material. Our co-hosts are Geraldine Dalby Ball, environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia. Trina Cooper, lifelong entrepreneur from Denver, Colorado. Rosemary Heyer, English teacher working with children in Frankfurt, Germany. Dr. Joyce Mollenhauer, doctor of naturopathy in Kingman, Arizona. That's me. Marianne Love, psychologist from Melbourne, Australia. So as you can see, we've got Canada, Australia, Germany, and United States represented here. It's pretty exciting. Our book that we're studying is Inside the Earth by Radu Sinemar. And last week we started on chapter 3 and covered basically just a little bit of introduction. First of all, we got to see on the screen and meet Drin, so that we had a little bit of an idea of one of the characters that's going to be introduced as we go through this chapter. So today we're going to be talking more about the actual experience of moving into inside the earth. And Mike, I believe you're going to start off with some comments there.
Hi, Joyce. Yes, I am. Thank you. So as we heard, remember last week, we finished on page 114. One of the last points that we highlighted was that the leaders should not be setting their country's strategies using the limited and materialistic thinking that they have when the scope is so much bigger than that of what's real. And Radu goes on to explain that there's almost a primal fear from the military when they can't explain something or when it's beyond their capabilities. If they can't know something, they instinctively judge it as threatening and they treat it with hostility. And they display a need for security, but actually it disguises a deeper hidden desire to conquer and have power. And the world view that results from this kind of thinking is hugely different from that held by the world inside the earth. So Radu reflects on the type of people like Dr. Shen who have maintained the links between the inner and the outer worlds. And he says that the powers and the ramification of those links between the exterior and the interior are extraordinary. And that even if this all seems strange and unreasonable in light of the world we know, these beings do exist. And he goes on to say that they manifest their presence and influence at key times to sustain good. Wow. Radu speaks even more of all of the diplomacy involved and explains that when things reach a high enough level, the game of information becomes very delicate. And in general, the give and take that results is constructive, but basically the nuances and the psychology and the complexity increases with each level of diplomacy. And when discussions are held with representatives of other worlds, emotions also play an important role. And Caesar's told Radu that discussions have already gone through several phases and says that we're in the phase now where it requires a process of educating human beings who are in those leadership roles and who have decision-making power. And since this can only be done in accordance with their own will and their own ability to understand it, it kind of requires a little patience and perseverance. But it was actually because of a lull, and as I move on to page 116, it was actually because of a lull in the encounters with some of the beings from the inter-earth that Caesar had taken the time and granted Radu such a high level of access. And so he became to know some of the very important elements about the interior of the planet. And now he's standing right beside Caesar, about to make his first trip into that kind of a world. And Radu confesses that he's, you know, at first he thought he'd be a little bit more impressed and things would be like grander and more spectacular, but that everything seems so natural. And Caesar speaks to him in a very calming manner, and Radu realizes that he's trying to calm him down, make sure that he's able to approach what's going to happen in a calm way. And Radu later learned that emotional behavior is extremely important on these expeditions and during these meetings. Radu is clearly nervous, and he even says that it's one thing to go into a tunnel which has only objects in it. It's a whole entire different thing to go into a place where complex energies are interacting and there's all kinds of relationships going on with the energies that we don't really understand. And he says, because of those energy frequencies of the physical plane merging with the frequencies of the subtle etheric planes, when you get towards the inner part of the earth, the energy balance of the person is very important and it requires a real stability of emotions. And so they're standing on the threshold of the second tunnel and they're kind of being enveloped in this diffuse green light. And as they move into the tunnel, Radu, you know, kind of heads off to use one of the vehicles because he assumes they'll be riding. It's a long way to the interior of the earth, after all. But Radu sees, Caesar tells him, no, we're not going to be needing the vehicles. The road's much shorter than you think. And he explains that this branch of the tunnel, things are a little simpler and they don't have to go quite so far after the initial distortion at the beginning of the tunnel. Radu notices that as they move into the tunnel, it's completely soundproof in there. It's almost like he's wearing some kind of sound-canceling headphones. And he can't hear anything except the beating of his own heart. And as they reach and they go past those gorgeous colored crystals embedded in the wall that seem to shine with their own light, Radu feels kind of like a doorway effect, like that's mildly sort of unsettling. He looks down to make sure what's going on, and he sees the floor is solid and smooth and kind of almost glassy. Then as they pass the crystal area and they get further into the tunnel, the sound insulation starts to go away and he can hear again. And they proceed a little further until all of a sudden, about 40 meters ahead of Radu, right there, he sees something that his senses really can't make any sense of. The tunnel seems to be offset or doubled back upon itself, and the whole thing seems blurred. And so I'll pass it off to the next person to explain us what happens now.
It's all so amazing. And Marianne's going to carry us from there.
Oh, you did a fantastic job, Mike. Thanks. So Radu runs ahead a little bit, which I can totally understand, although I think I'd be a little bit more frightened than that, in his excitement to get to the next chamber or to just see what's in there. And what he comes across, he didn't get very far. So I'm on page 117. He comes across what looks like, you know, like an indigo light, and he can kind of see that within it is like a large cube-shaped chamber or tunnel that almost like leads to another tunnel. It's almost like a chamber that leads to a bigger chamber. And Caesar encourages him to go ahead. And after they go through this passageway, what he realizes is that this is like a chamber that allows them to adjust their frequency so that they get used to going in, so they can vibrationally manage going into the inner earth. And so what feels like only like a small way through, Caesar lets Radu know that they've actually done a massive dimensional shift, and he gets him to show that by throwing his keys back through the tunnel that they've just walked through that cube kind of lighted area, and his keys totally disappear. And Caesar's like, oh, no, that's okay. The keys are going to be there in the other dimension when we come back. They'll be waiting for you. And so it's kind of proof that they have now entered a whole different route, a whole different dimension of reality. And so it started to make sense to Radu, like, you know, why they don't need vehicles anymore you know, like they're in a whole different ball game here, which is, you know, means everything goes much faster. Like they can just move a little bit and they've gone a long, long way. And so on page 119, 118, they're walking down the tunnel and not that far, about 20 meters. And it was starting as darker, but then it starts getting brighter and brighter and the walls get kind of a yellow color. And it feels like they've only just left, like the road is really short. Caesar explains, like, you know, they're in a whole different physics reality there. So you can't apply what's on the physical plane when you're looking at the ethereal plane and the dimensions there. So things jump. So you don't need to get into vehicles and travel for hours on end. You jump realities. And so this next tunnel is where they do another jump through the passageway. And I thought it was interesting in this one that Caesar put his arm around Radu to get him to walk through this particular tunnel. I reflected on that. I was wondering if that was to help him remain calm and steady, or was it to help him get his vibration up to whatever frequency he needed to get through this particular dimensional shift. Anyway, just something to think about. He doesn't say it clearly in here, but I was just wondering and imagining, you know, I imagine everything's intentional when you're in this kind of reality. And so, you know, it was interesting that they ended up just in like another chamber. And this is where they, you know, they look like a well-carved kind of cave, you know, like a large cave. And this is where they met a couple of other people. So there were some people walking towards them and actually put up a hand signal getting them to stop. And it looked like they were talking to someone, like they were receiving radio transmissions from someone. And what I was curious about is, what did they look like? And they said that they had olive skin and they had black hair. So I thought there's a little bit of information for you for what they look like. And that they look like two men of medium height. Yeah. So that takes us right over onto page 119 for our next co-host.
Thank you, Marianne. That just, the excitement builds as we go here. And Trina's going to pick up from there.
Yeah, thank you. And so the men, they had stopped Radu and Caesar in this kind of cave-looking area. And Radu had about a minute and a half to take a look around and, you know, really scope it out a bit. And he said it looked like a natural cave that had been expanded and the walls had been sanded and polished, but you could still see that there were modifications that had been made. It seemed like a passageway, but that was actually serving as a storage hangar. And as he looked about, he could see these great sized crates that were stacked on top of each other in the room. And he thought it was a bit peculiar because there was no vehicles. He saw no signs of vehicles. He seemed to think that this might be a military area because it was plain and simple, kind of stark. He described it as Spartan-like. And the men looked like they were military. They were dressed in uniforms. He saw three other men that were walking around while he was, you know, doing some tasks. And the uniforms were beige, dark brown stripes with strapped boots and belts. And the two that were standing with them had tunics on their chest with pockets. He didn't see any weapons, and he thought that was interesting. And he was wondering if this was a normal procedure for people who came down into this area in the earth. At that point, another man approached, and this man was wearing a gray-white coat that was belted, and he thought he kind of looked like a monk. He was a little bit taller, and he thought maybe he's a spiritual mentor, but then he recognized him. This was the same man that was in the hologram in the projection room, and he knew it was Dryan. This coat that Dryan was wearing had a hood, but he wasn't wearing it, and he appeared to be about 50 years old, black eyes, but he had white, vivid, shiny skin. Radu could feel Dryan's gentleness and his wisdom, and Radu was surprised at how easily he could perceive this. He thought, that's really different than when I'm up on the surface. And Dryden bowed to Caesar, and then he turned around and he spoke to Radu. Now, Dryden, as he spoke to Radu, he said, your senses and your capabilities are amplified. These vibrational frequencies are higher than they are on the surface. They're physical, but they're still refined, but you're getting closer to an etheric type energy. So everything functions much easier. Now, Radu was a little bit taken back because he was watching Dryden and he was hearing him, but he was speaking a different language that Radu did not recognize. He thought it sounded like ancient Greek, but at the same time, he was understanding every single thing that Dryden was saying to him. And he thought, that's a little weird. He's telepathically telling me at the same time he's speaking this other language. He also thought, he didn't even introduce himself. And with that, Dryden came back and said, you already know my name. And Radu hadn't said it out loud. He had just thought it to himself. Yet here again, Dryden answered him. So Dryden had a very direct way of being. Radu was noticing that he had this extraordinary sense of will. And that though he was not quite dominating, he had this gentle, unrelenting firmness about him. At that point, Dryden pointed to the left and told them all to, or basically pointed, and they all began to move over to the left, heading toward this elevator that was embedded into the wall. Radu was a bit confused as he was walking there, trying to understand how Dryden could be speaking to him in this other language, yet he clearly understood everything he was saying. And at that point, Dryden turned around and started speaking in Romanian and said, I'll just speak to you like, you know, with this language, it's your language and it's kind of ours too. So they got onto the platform. The cabin had transparent walls and it appeared to be embedded in the rock. But as Caesar and Dryden and the two soldiers got in, the door closed automatically and Radu could not see any kind of panels or any kind of buttons that would actually operate it. Yet it was being activated. And at that point, I will move to the next co-host.
Thank you, Trina. That was a really good coverage of that. Now we're going to hear from Rosemary, all the way from Germany.
Yeah, thank you, Joyce. Thank you, Trina. Yes, now Radu is in a dimensional elevator and it is descending very fast. And he perceives some layers of rocks just rushing by, and he does not feel the usual fast movement of an elevator like we would feel at home in our physical plane. And of course, Radu's mind is running again, and he's asking himself all kinds of questions like, what's the technology of the elevator, and what's his energy source, and is there maybe a shaft going down deep through the planet so he can descend? And they're passing very rapidly rocks, and he's passing lava streams twice, which is really touching him very much, because not only because of the warm temperature and also that intense orange color, he just kind of really feels impressed by what he senses there when he's passing that lava stream. And the heat actually from that lava stream doesn't feel the same like from a stove or a fire. And Radu guesses that the whole elevator ride maybe only took about 30 seconds. That's what he thinks. And now they're arriving at a plateau where the elevator stops. And that's just the same feeling like a regular elevator for him. And he's stepping out with all the others out of the cabin. And now, watch out. Now we're going to see what he sees. Imagine what he sees. He sees a valley, a wide, big valley. He sees a city spanning all the way to the horizon, to a distant calm sea. And he's just so touched and so emotional, not only because of the beauty he sees, but also knowing that this scenery is actually inside the earth. He feels he sees a highly evolved and clean ecosystem, And you can actually see on page 123 a drawing of what he sees of the scenery. And from that platform where he's standing with all the other guys, there's a kind of extension of some kind of rock wall. And he noticed that these are surrounded by human designed landscaping. Sand is mixed with very nice pebbles and the rocky walls slightly arc in. And there's also some really carefully carved rocks. And there's a city spreading before him from the left to the right, and a cloudy sky above with luminous lightning with a kind of reddish yellow color. And not a bright, intensive light, really. The sky seemed to bend in, and it seemed all what he saw is somehow closed in. He feels like it's kind of closed in, and he's starting to get afraid, thinking maybe I'm already in that empty interior in the center of the planet. And Dryan, as usual, picks up his thoughts again, smiles at him and says, no, this is just a big empty space. And he explains that they are inside the solid rock bed of the Earth. So that is usually the place where what we call the mantle of the Earth. Maybe some of you remember we talked about the honeycomb, all these cavities in the mantle of the Earth, in the rock mantle. And Dryan also pointed out that this is still the physical plane, but has a less density and the frequency are higher. They're actually similar to what we would call a subtle plane or an etheric plane. And he confirms to him that there are other cavities, even bigger than this one, and each of them have their own peculiarities and their own design. And Radu is really starting to realize that this meeting was planned by Cedar, so that he gradually could learn more about the interior of the planet with Dryan and being a kind of a tour guide. And I'm passing on to the next one. Thank you.
That was great, Rosemary. And Geraldine is going to tell us a little bit more about this experience that Radu is having.
Absolutely. And as Rosemary said, have the book. If you have the book, definitely have a look at that page 123. And I think it's quite magic that it's even the numbers of the page are 123. Starting it all off, bringing two together and three, everything comes. And you'll see there it's been described. And as the words take us through, it describes how first Radu is attempting to see this and put words to it that's similar to the surface. However, he's saying everything is more muted. It's not like one bright location of sunshine. It's a luminosity in what he was calling clouds, but he's now calling fog. So there's a luminosity one would call the heavens in the sky. And it's beautiful that the page of 124 really opens by saying he's just feeling incredibly grateful, deeply grateful for this extraordinary chance. And it goes on to say it's feeling like a dream. You know, but not just a normal dream. It's a dream that's amplified by the nature, by being there and everything that's involved. And we hear again about vibration. Even going in, he's already been assisted through the location itself in having his vibration lifted or having his vibration matched. And then, as it says, that's amplified again by the location. He says there's a sweet dizziness to it. I love that description, a sweet dizziness. And the more evolved one is, when you come out, you can rapidly and easily return to normal. So again, we're harking back to the vibration and how evolved a person is. And he does say it's not a relaxing holiday, though. This is very new. And as he said, it's extraordinary. And he does go on to describe the imagery, even the plants. So he says it almost feels like he's in a space that's what we would call dawn or dusk, that feeling of an in-between part where the colors are slightly muted, but it still has all the biological elements. And I love his description because it's saying that it's in keeping with the location. So we're looking at nature, and nature is being exactly correct for where it is. It's lower growing. They are more shrub-like or ground cover-like, with large leaves that, you know, are reaching out wide so that the sun can reach them. And he's talking about that ecosystem of this inner world that he's looking at. And he's sharing that even though the colors look slightly muted, the softer gray greens, and even the water is dark, that there's a vital energy, and vital is a life force. So there's a vital energy emanating from all these plants. And as he said, it gives a feeling of solidarity, which lets us know there's like a harmony. So there's looking at this environment, he's feeling the vibrancy of it, and feeling that it's cohesive, it's one.
That's awesome, Geraldine. Isn't it just such a coincidence, in quotation marks, that you got those pages to talk about when you're an environmentalist and very much involved with the vegetation on the surface of our planet? I love the section on page 126 where he is talking more about the plants, but what he's talking more about is actually the whole response he's having to this experience in this unusual environment. And I love the fact that he keeps sharing with us the questions that come in his mind, because that way we can travel along and see what the answers are going to be. And the answers do come bit by bit. So he talks about there's a sort of power of life in this area that he's now experiencing, that it's a simple force, but it's pure. Now, those are all words that really resonate in my heart, and I'm sure they do in anyone reading them. So he felt more and more an infusion. So his whole body was being exposed or experiencing a beneficial energy. And it was like balancing his psycho mental phases of himself and his energy. And this is quite a combination. That not only does he experience balance psychologically, but he's also experiencing balancing in his whole energy field. So I don't think there's anyone on this call that wouldn't like to have that experience, to see what does that feel like. That must be just absolutely fabulous. Then he actually refers to it as an inner euphoria. So the fact he's calling it inner, to me, means he kind of interprets on the surface when you have euphoria, it's more of an outer experience that you're reacting to your outer world. Here, he's getting very much in touch with his inner reaction, which he calls euphoria. And he says, on top of all of that wonderful experience, he says everything in his own being, he feels controlled about it, that it feels natural. It's not like this ecstasy that might just last for 2 seconds. He feels extremely harmonious about how it is coming to him. And then he moves on to talk about the fact he hasn't seen any animals yet in this area. No sign of any animal. The plants are there. And then he gets to see some birds flying at a very low altitude. So he comes to this conclusion, and I'm sure we're going to get more information on it, that somehow the specific vegetables and the way the people live there has prevented any animal species. Well, I think we might find something different, but that's just in my own head of whether that will be true. So already feeling totally eager to get the answers to all these questions, he sees a source of light that he can't explain. And it's very uniform right across the sky. He says, according to his estimations, it was like a mist that was only about the height of typical storm clouds. So again, he's asking questions of what is this all about? And there's not a sun in the sky, Dryan tells him. And again, responding to his questions in his head. The light here comes from a strong radiation of the massive lava layer that is above our cavity. And I think we touched on that already, the influence of the lava and the energy from the lava. So because the light doesn't come from any particular isolated source, then it's diffused uniformly. And it's hard to sort of imagine exactly what that is, because our sun is such a direct source of light to us that it isn't uniform. We have shadows, we have levels of color and so forth. And then he goes on, because he was kind of smiling to himself. Dryan, of course, the personality of Dryan is already being observed by Riot. So he says, it's obvious that he can speak clearly, concisely, directly, and very precise. And he's made those kind of comments about Sasu later. Now he moves on to an exciting flight over the city, that these platforms come floating through the air with no understanding. They obviously have no influence, or gravity has no influence. They come floating from the city and they land just a couple of inches above the earth. And he's encouraged to climb on one, and Ryan climbs on with him, and they move on and start the journey over to the city to have the excitement of that experience. So this is quite a very active section. And it'd be fun to go back to the beginning here with Mike, and maybe each of us could share what stands out so much for us individually as we're getting more and more involved with this. What stands out as being such a difference from what our life is here on the surface of the earth, and what's it opening up in your minds? So Mike, if you could make some comments that way.
Well, Joyce, the thing that I think that maybe because I was fortunate enough to be the first person, I got to listen to everybody afterwards and just hear the evolution of what was going on and how people were getting caught up into all of this. And I sat back and I thought to myself, he's not even in the real deal yet. He's only in the practice one, you know? He's just in where you get the kind of used to it a little bit. He's not even fully right through, and it's already pretty incredible. So, you know, he's just gotten a little bit of a taste, I think, of what he's about to get to. And already it's kind of rocked his socks, I think. So that I think that's what hits me most, is that as incredible as all of this is, we're still in the, you know, we're on the taxiway. We haven't even taken off yet. And it makes it just like, wow, what could be going on? Where could we be going with this? Or what is his, you know, what's next kind of thing? I mean, and you can feel it as he goes through it. I think we were all kind of feeling it, you know, when he says he walks through and he perceives the doorway, it's like we've all had that feeling somewhere along the way that something happened and you kind of felt it, but didn't know what it was. Well, so you kind of get caught up in all of this with him. And then you stand back and go, well, wait a second, we're only in the practice, you know, we're in the tunnel that they just get you a little bit revved up to get going. So I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about what's going to happen when we go down that other one.
I feel the same, Mike. It's so exciting. Like, and I didn't say before, but when they were walking past, like when they were going through the dimensions, they actually passed another tunnel. And Caesar said, oh, that's the one, like right down into the center of the earth. So that's going to be amazing. And I think
that's what I was referring to.
How crazy. And I think it's really interesting that they have to prepare. Like, this is almost the preparation trip to get his frequency up to the level that would actually manage going into the inner earth, like, you know, incrementally training himself. And he's been in training for years. Like, from reading the book, he was in training long before this moment in time to get himself ready to vibrationally manage this.
Okay, Trina, would you like to have your personal comments.
Definitely. One of the things that that stood out for me was how he kept saying things were so clear, how the perceptions were clear, how he, you know, much clearer, like he was picking up and sensing things much clearer than what he did on the surface. And the telepathy, the just the sense of what the room felt like, or what the atmosphere felt like, or what the people felt like, you know, and it was just interesting to me that he, sometimes when you're in a meditation and you get to a certain place, things are so vivid and they're so clear, or maybe you have a heightened moment of clarity where something's going on and it seems like you jump, but people describe things like that. And it made me think, you know, do they jump dimensions when they have something super exciting that's going on? You hear about the people, you know, that like lift cars, or when there's a tragedy or something, but everything is so crystal clear to them in the moment. And it made me think, well, does that mean you move into a dimensional shift? And this clarity was something that stood out. And then again, the other thing that popped in my head as I was reading, and I'm thinking, oh, they're going, starting to go into the earth and everything. And I thought, what's the oxygen like? It's like, is there oxygen? Is the air different? All these crazy hardwired ideas of what, you know, could be or should be or whatever. And I thought, wow, is it different? Is the air different? The light's different. We're down in the earth. Are we in the earth? We're in a different dimension. The physicality, all the doubting things that would maybe pop up to a scientist or pop up to a politician or someone, those kinds of things. And I went, wow, look at that. I've got all these ideas that are running around in my head. And you had to kind of push that aside and say, oh, I'm going to, you know, I want to really see how this goes. Maybe they'll explain it even better when you get down there. So really exciting to be moving on into this book. And like everyone else said, we're just starting the journey. We haven't even gotten in there yet. So this is exciting. It's exciting.
Then Geraldine, perhaps you can share what you're.
Absolutely. A couple of things stood out. And one was in that very first page, which we've had shared already, but the wording that says the people, the beings, do come from the inner world to the outer world to assist. And so there's just a little message in there that's that question that we often say, what if? Okay, what if this is true? Be aware of it. How can we sometimes see that there's a feeling or a presence or something that feels good, and to actually acknowledge it? So that was one. Also, another one that stood out was there's a that same paragraph there a little further down. So this is on page 117, actually, where it says, 116, the importance of a stability of emotions. But more than that, that Raju is able to be okay, that he might not be okay. And he says, you know, Cesar had chosen a short period of time. Well, he thinks Cesar has chosen a short period of time for the journey inside the earth, probably so as not to overpower my subconscious and to avoid reactions or other undesirable emotional manifestations of being. And in that, there's an acknowledgement that that is there, but there's not something that says, oh, I haven't practiced enough, or I haven't trained enough, or it's not good enough that I still have these subconscious things that come up. It's just acknowledge that they're there, understand we have tools to assist us to overcome, and that we do have practices to make us stronger. But at the same time, it doesn't mean, you know, stop and don't progress. Move ahead in that gradient scale, and it's up to us how fast that gradient scale is. So that was one of, there's a few key things, but let's hear from everybody else. But that was a key one for me.
Okay, we can come back again. So that I'd like to just share my real extreme interest in the description he gives of these flying objects that he gets to travel back into town with, because he says that they actually came right up and stopped right at him, and there was nobody driving them. he didn't see the people that he was with having any control over them. So he came to the conclusion, obviously, gravity wasn't any kind of problem with them, and that it was very high tech. So he describes them as an oval, and they'd be about 1.5 meters in the long end and about 1 meter across. So very particular measurements that they were, and they were big enough so that both he and Brian could get on one together. And then he talks about them actually looking like they could be a metal. But obviously, this is another area where he's questioning because he doesn't know for sure. But being thinking it's a metal, it's actually transparent. And I'm sure in his mind, he's thinking, well, metal isn't usually transparent. And there's a gold and silver yellow combination, which sounds more like maybe pure gold, that had a reddish tint. So all of these very detailed descriptions so that we can kind of visualize how different this is from anything that Radu has ever experienced before and that we haven't experienced. So he climbs on the platform, Brian goes with him, and Caesar and the two soldiers were on a separate platform, and they start their way back into town. So that's where that page ends. But just a couple of little comments that I've been intrigued with. When he talks about jumping, the jump to me, I don't know a whole lot about Star Wars, but I'm sure Star Wars fans will just gobble this book up. So the jump to me was that time and space no longer existed, that he moved, like it's already been mentioned, into another dimension. But there wasn't any concern about how long this was taking, what distance were they traveling. He was jumping, and there's something in my head that helps me recognize what that could possibly involve. So I'll go back to Mike there. Do you have something else you'd like to add to that, Mike?
I have a couple of things. I think the word maybe you're looking for, Joyce, is a Stargate. If there was a movie, there was a movie called Stargate, if you want to go in, I think they made it into a series even, and the round kind of whole tunnel thing is reminiscent of that, to me at least. And so I think that may be the image you're looking for. But Trina, you were touching on some things when you were saying, he's observing things, but not really sure what he's observing and not sure how much he can trust what he's observing. And it made me, as you were saying that, I was thinking, we read this book and we think, oh yeah, you gotta up your vibration, and it's like, okay, got that one, and you move on. And it's like, wait a second here. Wait a second. What does this mean? This means that everything you see and everything that you sense and everything that you're used to interpreting a certain way probably doesn't or shouldn't be interpreted that way in this new reality. I mean, that's just so upside down from where we are. I mean, that's got to be mind-blowing. So when he says you got to be able to control your emotions and you're in a situation where you can't even trust what you're seeing or what you're touching or feeling because it's a totally different physics, it's like, wow, it's almost one of those things. The more you think about it, the weirder it gets, or you get lost in it, So I, when you were saying that, I was thinking about that, and you touched on it, Joyce, too, and you said how different, how different. I wrote down as you were saying how different it is in this perspective was what looking at, these things flying around, hoverboards or whatever they are, it's like everything is different. So how do you stay a complete emotional plane, very, in control, when everything that you're used to seeing, hearing, feeling, sensing, smelling, whatever, who knows if it's to be interpreted the same way. So that's kind of where I go with it. It's just like, wow, you can get caught in this.
But then on the other hand, he makes a real emphasis on the fact that he does not have the emotional reaction that he would have expected, that he actually is more stable than he's ever been. So that part's really intriguing to me. Marianne, do you, I bet from the psychology end, you might have a comment or two.
Yeah, I do. Well, I was thinking a couple of things, like the importance of having a teacher and a guide and having somebody you trust. So I'm assuming that he's firstly using the guidance of Caesar to help regulate his own nervous system and his own emotional reaction. So to bring a sense of safety with somebody that's already traveled that journey. So I think all of us can think about that and apply that to our lives in some way, shape or form. And the other thought I had and what stood out to me on page 125 was that he felt in that space a vital energy emanated from every pore of the cavity. He felt clean, pure, and a profound energy. And I think all of us pick up on the vibrations around us wherever we go. And I don't know if you've ever been to, you know, certain sacred places. Like for me, like Uluru, the Ayers Rock, people might know that by in Central Australia or other places, just have a profound energy, and no matter who you are, you feel it. And it just makes your nervous system so calm and peaceful and blissful and happy. And that's what I'm hearing is also happening in this context for him. And that's helping him stay regulated and not letting the mind go off on its games. Plus, he's been cultivating his mind for a long time. He's been thinking about this, learning about this. For us reading this book, it also cultivates our mind for an experience like this. It's not unfamiliar once you've, you know, heard the story and, you know it's true from another person's perspective.
Part of that for me is the emphasis that he puts on trying to find some similarity, to have a comfort level that this compares. So with what you've just said, I think it's really important to recognize that this is giving us an opportunity to be exposed to something that's totally different, but to be open to the totally different. Because the word peculiarity is one of the words that's used in this book, that Radu is finding this peculiar. So he wants, or seems to want, to find something that he can relate to from what he's used to on the surface. And this is such an invitation, I think, to the reader and obviously to Radu to move forward with the experience and just embrace it and integrate it and be open that something can be totally different than what we're used to. So I think there's just a kind of a extra message there. And now, Geraldine, have you got an additional comment?
It's around that point where there are things that we can learn from the inner earth and these experiences to also be more aware of on the earth. Like I recalled when I was reading this, like it wasn't a conscious recollection at first. The pictures just came back. And I recall when I went to Nepal hiking and that I had been very focused on completing work before I left. So my fitness level was really low. But I remember saying, it's okay. Once I'm in those mountains, there's an energy that comes from the earth and I'll be fine. And indeed, that was the outcome. But it's very much that knowing that, again, this book is teaching us things from the inner earth that we can apply on the surface. So bringing that awareness that energy doesn't come from the food we eat, energy doesn't have to come from, you know, the physical matter of us. If we're thinking of inner earth, they're talking about that being less dense. That means we're seeing ourselves as the electromagnetic field. As an electromagnetic field, our energy can tap into this boundless energy, this beautiful energy that we see is in the same shape as our body. That's what we can move forward with. And as society, we can ditch the need for coffee in the morning or need for stimulants or need for any of that. And every time I hear a person who says, oh, you know, I've switched coffee in the morning for walking or breathing, they share such a profound happiness. And that can sound simple, but it's those things that we know then lift our frequency, whether we're going to the inner earth or not. Every day is a journey that we can take to our own inner earth.
Beautiful. Trina, I didn't mean to jump over your...
Oh, that's fine. I just, you know, you were talking about the peculiarities and Geraldine was touching a little bit on you know, really the excitement and when you, you know, go out and you explore in the earth. And on 122, Radu asks him, are there other cavities of this kind inside the mantle? And Dryden says, of course. And some of them are even bigger than this one. Many of them are inhabited and have their peculiarities. And after you get used to specifics here, you'll then find out more. And I thought, you know, when you travel around the surface of the earth and you meet all these different peoples and all these cultures and you see incredible beauty, and one area of the earth will look so incredibly different than another. And I'm imagining that as you go into all these different cavities, there's different types of beings, different inhabitants. The scenery may look completely different in one area inside compared to something else. So it really is an adventure. And if you're one of the people that, you know, really loves this kind of, you know, watching those movies about or documentaries about what the earth looks like and about the nature and what goes on in different places or the people, this is just like another extension of that, just bigger and more peculiar than what we normally look at.
Again, that word peculiar, it's, I find interesting that that fits for how we react to this, because someone who has never moved out of, I knew a neighbor once who had never gone more than 40 miles away from her home, and she was 85 when I knew her. So anything outside of her 45 mile radius would have seemed peculiar. So I'm glad you brought up the idea of on the surface, the variety that we have. Well, even the people, our co-hosts here, Canada, where Mike is, the leaves aren't on the trees yet, the spring. In Arizona, we've had spring since February. And Trina's had snow fairly recently. And Australia's in a totally different season. So that for the lady that I speak of, she had no concept of any of that and really didn't have any interest. So that the traveler on the surface is going to be a person that's going to be more, I think, more prepared to consider going into the earth, inside the earth, and see the variations that are there. And it's all such a huge adventure, even to read about it. So I think we've got just a couple more moments here. If there's any closing comments that any of you co-hosts want to make.
I've just got one second, Joyce, that adds on to what you just said. The other place, the other thing that could influence a person's ability to be open and less rocked by something different is meditation. Because if you recall, when you go back to the blackness, you might be sitting on a mountain all your life and never been anywhere. But if you've moved into states of meditation where even if you're aiming for there to be nothing, things come, then you do get exposed to something that can be quite different from the material world around you.
That's such
so if you can't travel, close your eyes.
That's a perfect response, because there's just so much reference in this book about getting your mindset opened. And what you have just said is exactly a beginning point for anyone to take if they wish really... I want to prepare themselves to go into the inner earth.
Joyce, I was going to say something a little earlier I think that what this book really forces you to come face to face with as you read it is exactly kind of what we've been talking about. When you get to this point, what do? Do I expand and allow myself to say, okay, there's a whole lot more there, let me take it in? Or do you close down and say, no, it doesn't fit my world, so it can't really work, you know? And that's like the question that this book forces you to answer. And you either say, oh, no, it's crazy, I don't believe this, or you say, what about it, you know? And And what about it is such a much more interesting answer, you know?
It sure is. And we have such a major opportunity here to do that. And again, if people that are on the call can get themselves the book, you can't help but get just totally more involved when you see the sketches and read the words for yourself. But I think our excitement as co-hosts is a little bit obvious. And we're going to enjoy moving forward again next week. It's that time to conclude our studies this evening. And we thank you for sharing your time and energy with us. You matter and count, so you always make a difference. We look forward to being with you next week as we make that leap into a greater consciousness through the study of this wonderful book. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine, and always all good things to you. And thanks for being with us this evening.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.